If you love hurricanes, daiquiris, and, well, any rum cocktail, listen up. Captain Morgan's about to shake things up like never before. We're talking Bourbon Street, New Orleans, home to legendary drinks and unforgettable moments. But what if we told you the most iconic cocktails here have one thing in common? Hint? It's not bourbon. That's right, it's rum. And Captain Morgan is bringing unforgettable fun to Bourbon Street in a way you won't want to miss. Get ready for something big as we gear up for Super Bowl 59. Make sure to keep your eyes on NOLA's most iconic street. Who knows, Bourbon Street might just need a new name. Stay tuned for clues and get ready for the most legendary adventure yet. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Original Spice Rum, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Company, New York, New York.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, No Bad Dog Army? This is an excellent podcast with a dog owner who is just so overwhelmed, doesn't know what to do. And they have a pretty interesting case I don't think we've talked about recently anyway. Her dog is going after, her dog is biting people randomly, but it's only when we pet the dog. And so we go through health, we go through the protocols, what to do, what not to do, and the dog is also a little reactive towards the other dog. So again, I wouldn't bore you guys with something that I didn't think was going to be impactful for your life and beneficial and give you value. There's much more to that with the dialect that we start to explain things. And I think that it's a great podcast. It's just a dog owner that just loves her dog. And she doesn't really have a ton of experience in training. And her vet said to call me and she's like, what do I do? Right. So she doesn't know a lot about me. So she just doesn't know where to start. So it's a great kind of foundational build with the client. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. I hope you find it valuable. And if you like this, consider liking us on whatever you're listening to this on, right? Leaving us a review. That's the only way we grow. It's the only way other people get help. It's the only way that the No Bad Dog Army continues to do it, because we're the number one dog training podcast in the world because of you and because of those things that you do. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
Okay. I have this dog that I rescued 3 years ago. I've had him for 3 years. Recently, like, we've had aggression with him. Since I got him, we've had aggression. We've had some resource aggression. We've worked on that. We've worked on a lot of his issues, reactivity, all of that. He's a strong dog. He's Rottweiler/Shepherd, and he's a traumatized dog. So I've got, we have this aggression issue that has resurfaced. Mm-hmm. We had 6 to 8 months of no aggression from this dog whatsoever. And then in December, it started again, and he came to me with his back right paw lifted. And when I reached down, because I've done this before when we've been on a walk, I cupped it in my hands. He turned around immediately and bit me. So I had my gloves on, so it didn't get my hands. So I was thinking, okay, there's pain with the paw. I get it. But then about a week later, he came out on the couch in the morning. He came out and he jumped on the couch next to me, wagging his tail. He comes out every morning. He'll sit next to me. He was facing me, looking at me, wagging his tail. I reached over to pet him on the right side of his head, and he promptly turned around and bit me.
Mm.
And I mean, this was, he had just gotten up. There were no issues. It wasn't a behavioral, I mean, sometimes he attacks our beagles too, which we have out of nowhere that we can't understand why. So there's just this last piece of aggression that we're trying to deal with. And it came back. I mean, it was gone for 6 to 8 months. We had nothing with him. And then all of a sudden in December, it started again. We are going on a trip at the end of February, and my plan was to have him go to doggy daycare in the afternoon to play with the dogs, to get to know the place, and then leave him a night or two and then to board him. But I can't do that if he's biting again.
Okay. Explain to me a little bit about the I think you said trauma or abuse that he had before. Is that what you said?
I, We have no idea what trauma or abuse this dog had. I picked him up from a rescue, North Country Rescue, up here outside of Utica 3 years ago. He had been picked up in South Carolina running the streets, and he had been in an animal shelter down there for 6 months. He was in a shelter. They had only had him at the rescue for a month. Now, the rescue didn't divulge to me that he was an aggressive dog. I mean, and it's my own fault because I didn't specifically ask that. We found out fairly early that he had resource aggression, which has since dissipated. We don't have that very much anymore, but we manage the situation with this dog. We're always managing the food, the treats, all of it around the other dogs. Mm-hmm. So that has kind of gone by the wayside.
Good.
When we first got him, he bit my husband like 3 times in a course of 2 years. I mean, the third time it was after we had had him for 2 years. And one of the bites was really concerning because it was another issue where he walked up to my husband. My husband was sitting in the chair, wagging his tail, happy, great, wanting to see my husband, put his head down between his legs. The minute my husband reached down to pet him, he turned around and bit him.
Hmm. So it always seems that you touch him and that's when he bites. There hasn't been any random, I walk up and bite you. It's just when you touch him. Is that correct?
It seems to be when we touch him. And again, like when the beagles, sometimes he's out in the pen. We have an acre fenced in and he goes out there with the 2 beagles we have, mm-hmm. and they hunt, you know, the rabbit dogs, and he loves to hunt with them, and they're out in the pen together. And then they'll come in the house and he'll all of a sudden just put one of them on the belly. And this last instance, which was last, you know, after he bit me just recently, he put the dog went belly up, the beagle did, but then the dog, he continued to go at the dog. And
that's,
you
the
know,
dog,
we place
though.
Him,
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
We
sorry.
Place him, and then I use a muzzle on him. I've started using the muzzle when he does it to show him that is not acceptable. I mean, I'm not going to go near this dog because he will bite me. I mean, I know that.
Okay. So you feel like you're fearing right now that if you go near him, he'll bite you, or if you touch him, he'll bite you.
I'm very cautious around him. Like now I don't even want to pet him. When he gets up on the couch next to me and wags his tail, I don't pet him anymore because he bit me then. You know, there was nothing. He had just come out of the bedroom sleeping. He walked out, tail wagging, the whole thing. And I know, you know, I've read up the tail goes this way or that way. You got to be careful. He was on a couch. It went up and down, you know, to the couch.
Yep.
So I really couldn't read. And he also doesn't growl. He raises his lip and will immediately go from that to a bite.
Okay.
And he's also, I mean, he's reactionary, he's smart, he's strong, he's independent because they picked him up running the streets. He's got his own head. He's very independent.
Yeah, sounds like
it.
And he's
mistrustful. I don't believe he still trusts me 100% after 3 years.
Yeah. Okay, so what is your goal? Explain to me what you would like.
I would like to feel more comfortable with his aggression and kind of try to alleviate some of his aggression. And I don't know how to go about that. I know, you know, I've worked with a trainer and he had methods that I did not care for this dog because, as I said, he bit my husband. Mm-hmm. We believe there's trauma in his past. He acts like a dominant, you know, wonderful alpha dog, but he is scared. You know, he's very fearful. I know this about this dog. So the methods, I didn't like them, like the e-collar and the shocking and the choke collar and the give a correction. I didn't like that for him because I don't want to traumatize him more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so sure. I didn't agree with the methods. So I know that, you know, people say, well, you're not a good leader for the dog. You're a good dog owner, but not a good leader. I don't know how to change that at this point with this dog. He trusts me more than anybody, but he still doesn't trust me completely.
Yep. Okay. So, all right. And how old, I know you said you've had him for 3 years, but how old do we think he is?
They have him turning 5 in August.
Okay.
So I got him at 1.5 years.
Okay. So, couple things I just on this would be, There's a couple layers here. My first initial response is have you gotten a physical exam, like a thorough physical exam?
Yes, he had some. I mean, even when I got him, it was strange because when they picked him up, he was 44 pounds when they picked him up in South Carolina. When the rescue had him, when I got him, he was up to 48 pounds. There was nothing about any issues with vomiting or anything. And I got him, and shortly after that, I started feeding him the food we feed our dogs. He started throwing up yellow bile every morning. Mm. So there was an issue. We did all kinds of tests to find out if it was digestive or anything, been back to the vet. I did blood tests. I did everything along that line to find out if there was an issue digestive-wise. We now have him on a specialized, the specialized EN diet for his stomach. You know, we have him on the EN diet, the food, and I give him chicken with it, and he seems to be eating that. I mean, there was a point where he would not eat for me because he would throw up and then he wouldn't go near the food because he thought it was making him sick. So we had a lot of that, and we've got that under control. I first thought that was what was fueling the aggression, not eating and all of that, because that can make a dog testy. So we got all of that under control, mm-hmm. everything. And now it might be his paws. I mean, it might be he burnt the bottom of his paws or something when he was in South Carolina. And just when maybe he just reacts and then he thinks about it afterwards, because he is a very reactionary dog. Mm-hmm. And maybe his first thing is just to bite and then think about, whoa, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Because he's very apologetic afterwards. I mean, he comes up, licks me all over, climbs up on top of me. You know, this is a dog that I had upside down in a drainage ditch, putting a gentle leader back on his head. Why he let me do it, you know, and then he bites me for no reason. So we're just like, it's the strangest thing.
Yeah. So I understand that you went through the diet and the potential risks of the dog having some allergic or some sort of GI reaction to the right. diet. But have you done like a physical exam? So examining paws, feet, looking for sores, tumors, bumps, bruises, things like that?
Yes. Okay. Yes, the vet. I have him. My vet recommended I reach out to you after he bit me this last time, because I have been working with my vet, and she had an aggressive pit bull, and I think she had a consultation with you, but she recommended you at this point. And she told me this last time, she said she thinks it might just be he's a jerk. You know, he's got this jerk side that wants to be dominant. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I understand it sometimes, but when he does it for no reason, like, I know there's always a reason, but I didn't see any that day he bit me. Mm-hmm. And I've had him for 3 years, and he trusts me more than anybody else.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
We even got to the point where we thought it might be a head injury. That's our next step, to get his head analyzed to see if he got hit in the head or he's got a tumor or something.
Yep.
Because it's so bizarre.
Yeah, it is. It's frustrating, really. It's really frustrating because the dog that you love and care about is making it really hard to love and care about him, you know?
Cause yeah, 95% of the time he's this great dog, but since he bit me last time, he wags his tail. I don't want to go over near him.
Yep.
Like, you know, and I don't know how to teach him not to do that when he's doing it, except we use positive reinforcement. The dog does not get hit or ever. Mm-hmm. So I just pulled out the muzzle last time after he bit me and put it on him and said, no, you know, that's not going to go on here.
Yeah. Okay. But, so he is muzzle trained. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he lets us put the muzzle on him, but still, like, and here's the other thing. He injured his paw last week. He was out in the thing and he ripped his toenail. So we had to take him to the vet. She had to sedate him to do anything. The bandage was supposed to be on 5 days, but he got it off by the next day. And me and my husband, we put the muzzle on him, but we still would not put a new bandage on that foot because he was clearly traumatized. Mm. He was snapping at us. And we were traumatizing him, and it's like, no, we're not doing this.
With the muzzle, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we weren't comfortable.
Yeah.
Trying to doctor him with a muzzle on.
Right. Right. Well, that's, yeah, I understand. And there's benefits of the muzzle too, because it keeps you protected, especially if you're doing things that the dog doesn't want to do or the dog is going to be in pain of doing. That's like the benefits of the muzzle is you're going to be, you're going to be able to say, hey, you're going to hate this. And, you know, you're probably going to try to bite us, but we need to look at your toe or we need to look at your pads or we need to look at whatever. And so that is that. So here's my initial thoughts is, This is something that you have to work on incrementally in trial. This isn't a normal thing, you know, like a, hey, my dog is pulling in the leash or something. This isn't that. Right. This isn't obedience. Right. This is a behavioral thing. And
I mean, we can go to classes and I can get them to sit and stay all at once, but this this last piece.
Yeah. Yep. So here's where I would start is if so. Everything's kind of on the table right now as far as why this is happening. But obviously, like my first line of defense is always looking at like some sort of physical problem, right? I had a client that actually had a Borbal, big mastiff, and she called me one day and she's like, Tom, like he's biting me. Like every time I try to put a collar on, he's biting me. And it's just like, and I'm like, okay, this is abnormal behavior. You should bring him to the vet before you try to, you know, really look into further training, because if this is very out of characteristic and doesn't make sense, then there's probably a reason why it's happening. So she did. She brought him to the vet, and sure enough, there was like a some sort of cyst that they didn't see, and it was very painful, and that was it. So long story short, I think the first, outside of that, which it sounds like you've already done, is here's some things I would do is you need to so a couple things is if you have a dog that is exhibiting a behavior that is making your life with your dog extremely challenging to cope with. If you can take away the trigger that makes this happen, that's obviously a good thing to do, right? Or at least start to try to take it away as much as you can. And in this case would be touching the dog, because it seems like every circumstance that you've said so far is when you actually physically touch the dog is when he turns around
Turns around and bites.
Yeah. So I would start with that. Like, okay, you know, and again, it's not going to fix the problem, but it's going to fix the outcome that
results.
You're exactly right.
Right. So the results, yeah, I'm going to get the same results. So, well, I have sort of backed off, and I've made him come to me if I'm going to pet him.
Okay.
Like I've called him over to me, and when he comes, then I will pet him. But if he doesn't, I don't.
Okay. So do you feel like that when you call him over and you give him attention, like, okay, let me ask this. When is he okay with you petting him? Like, it sounds like you're saying in certain contexts, he's actually, like,
he's okay 98% of the time. That's what the problem is. 98% of the time he rolls over on his stomach. He can pet him. He rolls over on his back. He can pet his stomach. Mm-hmm. He comes running. He plays 98% of the time. He's great. There's just these instances out of nowhere where all of a sudden he's not. That's
okay.
What's so frustrating about this.
Yeah, but it's always when you're petting him or touching him.
Yeah, I mean, and it's always concerning. To me, it concerns the paws, because he lifted his paw again. He was doing that at the time when he first bit my husband, when he come up to my husband and my, you know, put his head between his legs and my husband was petting him. And the minute he reached down to pet him, the dog bit him. He had been lifting his paw. And the bottom line is, like my husband says, understanding what the problem is, but he can't just turn around and bite us for no reason. The unpredictability is the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we're dealing with, the unpredictability of when it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And so if you minimalize the trigger that is causing the issues, you will get a significant decrease in the problem, which is the biting, right?
But I don't understand what the trigger is with the beagles, like when they come in from the pen and he all of a sudden decides he's going to put one up on their back and he goes snapping at them for no reason after he's been out with the pen. So I don't understand what that trigger is, and I'm constantly watching him to make sure, like when he jumps off the couch, to make sure like his hair isn't up and You know, I mean, yep. I'm constantly washing him, but he does not growl. He lifts his flip at you, and then he goes right to a bite. So somebody must have hit him for growling at some point, because he is a silent biter.
Okay. So are you talking about two different things? Are you talking about when he's going after the other dogs or pinning the other dogs? He doesn't growl. Or are you talking? What are you talking about there?
He doesn't growl usually at all. He'll snap is what he does. His first thing is a snap, whether it's at you or at the other dog. Occasionally when he has bit us, he has lifted his lip. Or occasionally when he's wanted to be left alone, he has lifted his lip. And that's our signal that we just back off. Mm-hmm. We back right off, and we're fine with that when he does it. When he was sitting on the couch next to me and I pet him, I did not see the lip lift. I just seen him turn his head and go for my hand.
Yep. Okay. So let's dive into because these are two separate things. The pinning the other dogs is a separate thing from.
Okay, that's separate from his aggression towards us.
Yeah, completely separate.
Okay.
Because when he's pinning another dog, he's making a decision to just pin a dog. He's not sending them to the hospital.
Right.
So him biting you is much different than pinning another dog, and likely for just we'll get into that. But they're two separate things, and going back to him biting humans, there's a line here that we have to go down. And the first one, you know, outside of getting him checked up to see if there's a reason or a cause, which could be the, I don't know. It sounds like you've done all the things. So that's.
Yes. Like I said, the next thing is a head x-ray or a head MRI to find out if there's something up there or whether, you know, something's causing him trauma that way. We don't know.
Yeah. And a lot of times that just shows you, in my experience anyways, it just kind of shows you if there's any like tumors or anything, different hospitals can do different tests. So, I would encourage you to do that just to try to get, if there's a medical reason why this is happening, it's actually going to be a lot easier to deal with than not. So the other thing is, outside of the trigger. So I know that you're saying like you don't know what the trigger is. And in some cases, right. It obviously the goal is just to try to find the trigger of why this is happening. But if you still know the trigger, it's still super beneficial as a dog owner to delete it, because some people don't have a trigger. That's why I was asking earlier, is because some dogs will actually just go up to people and just bite them. And that's obviously not good at all. That is more of like a neurological issue where the dog is has a default, right? Like has some sort of defect to default into. Go ahead.
That's my fear, because if he just bit me, you know, when I walk him and he goes over to a person, you know, to be petted, because he does, I let him, you know, certain people I'll say, is it okay? He's friendly, and we'll walk over and they'll pet him. My fear is just he's going to reach out and bite him all of a sudden.
Yeah, and that could be you got to be careful about that, because that is a trigger, right? So if in your head you go, the only time that this dog actually bites somebody is if somebody pets him, and then you're allowing him to go up to strangers to be pet, that is definitely a risk you got to be careful about and be mindful of. The other thing is again, like really trying to identify the potential triggers. And so like as a dog trainer, things that I would be doing is I would be muzzling him when you can and work. I would continue to condition him on the muzzle, because the more you can put a muzzle on him, the more you can really analyze this and the more you can problem solve with this.
Yeah.
So I'd be putting the muzzle on him, and I would be trying to look for very specific triggers, like identifiers and insulated triggers on the dog. Like if it's, you know, at a particular time, like your job is to figure out what, like as a, you're trying to do an investigation, because right now you don't have a ton of information outside of it's random. Every time we touch him, it's random.
Right.
So your job is to try to figure out some sort of test that you can put him in a muzzle, and you can just start saying, okay, I'm going to pet just his sides for 2 days. Okay, no reaction. Okay, now I'm going to pet his legs. Okay, no reaction. And your job is to try to figure out some sort of consistency to really figure out what's going on. Like, why is this dog barking or biting and where? And then
It seems to be this very cold weather, because this was when we had it a lot last year with the paws. I think it's hitched to his physical, but again, not allowing him out and keeping him, you know, I mean, just taking him for walks or trying to keep him off his paws in the winter is extremely difficult for a dog who is very active. And if he's not active, then you get another issue.
Mm-hmm. And well, also too, you have to consider, like, that is a thing. Like, dogs, when it gets cold, if they have arthritis, it definitely flares up to that. So, you know, think about that too.
Yeah, well, we had him on gabapentin just recently, because I took him in with this biting incident when I put my hands around his paw and he turned around and immediately bit me. I brought him to the vet and she said his back toe was swollen a little bit, and we got him on the gabapentin, but some of the side effects are decrease of appetite, and some of them, you know, like, my concern, you know, we're going away and I've got some medication for his anxiety because we are leaving for a week. I've never left this dog, and I've got the Tramadol, whatever it is, for him. But it says one of the side effects is aggression. So I don't want to leave medicine to relieve his anxiety that's going to make him more aggressive. I don't know what to do.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, I wouldn't be so hard on yourself either, and put yourself in a very small box of, you're not gonna figure this out by the time you leave. So I wouldn't even put that in your head to try to figure out how we can solve this before you leave. The reality is you're gonna leave because you're a human being and you need to go do stuff and do your thing. Yes. And your dog is a dog, and your dog's gonna go, and you're gonna continue to work on this. So I think that dog owners get into this, like, anxious worry of, well, I got to bring him to the boarding place next week, and he's probably going to be anxious, and he might be aggressive. And it's like, well, that's a given. That's going to happen.
We've sort of backed down on boarding because I have, like, my son who's going to be here. But again, he needs to be able to control the situation when we're not here. And that's another fear I have. If we don't board them and I leave them here with the dogs, then somebody else has to control the situation and manage it. And it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah. But it also sounds like you can do, in my opinion, from what you've told me, the little bit I know about the situation is you could also do things really easily to just say, hey, don't. He's been having issues with petting him, so I would really limit your affection to your physical affection towards him. He loves playing ball, he loves cookies, he loves treats, he loves bones, whatever. Like, the dog is not going to be offended if we decide to say, hey, I'm not going to really give you too much physical affection because I don't want to trigger you and turn around and bite, right? So there's that, right? That's really easy to start working on. And then, and then the other thing is, we'll get it to the other dogs here in a moment, but the other thing, again, like, as you put the muzzle on and you're starting to identify, like, different parts of the body to see if there is a trigger, and some of the information that you just told me about the potential risk of arthritis, it is very common, especially with larger breed dogs, that they could have severe arthritis, especially in colder weather, just like humans do. We get stiffer, you know, definitely more pain and more irritation. And that could be it. And that could be a thing. Absolutely. And that's something that, you might look into. So joint supplements, talking to your vet about, hey, listen, and again, they would have to do x-rays to see if there is arthritis. And if that's something that you haven't done, if you did and the x-rays came back and said, oh yeah, we have severe arthritis in all four shoulder joints, then yeah, when it gets cold and the dog's out and stiff and they're sore, they're going to be cranky. Don't touch me. That hurts.
Right. So right. That, at least we have some guidelines as to when it's going to happen and what to look out for.
And you can treat
definitely,
it.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be cold weather related, because in the beginning of December, it got really cold. The other thing I did, only because he never had one on before, was like I said, when I first got him, he had the digestive issues, thrown up yellow bile. I had put a brand new Seresto's collar on him at the beginning of December, and I took that right off after we had the incidents. I'm like, well, maybe that's triggering something. I don't know.
Could be. Sure.
I took that right off of him, but you know, we've been cautious since then. I haven't really, you know, tested that theory.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've stayed away from them, really. So I don't know if it's helping or not helping that I took it off. I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm not pushing it with this dog.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to take your time. But I think also, too, you know, you really got to try to identify what's going on.
That's causing it. Yeah. Yeah. It is the most bizarre thing I have ever seen. This last bite, when he just, after 3 years, and I mean, he trusts me more than anybody. I mean, I left. And he was chasing the wrong car up the road because he got out. And he thought I was going the other way. He's out there chasing the wrong car up the road looking for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, this dog trusts me more than anybody. So still, for him to do that really blew my mind. Like, after 3 years, where...
Yep. Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, so moving forward... That's something I would absolutely try to figure out, because your job right now is to try to figure out if there's a reason, medical reason why this is happening. Not only will you know why it's happening, but you'll also be able to treat it. So tons of things out there holistically or in medicine that you can treat for arthritis, because that if you, and I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not a vet. I've been professionally working with dogs for over a decade, and I've had dogs my whole life. So, but I mean, if you were to tell me, like, hey, if you have a dog with severe arthritis and the dog is biting you in colder months, that's actually the first thing I would be looking at, is I would be doing x-rays on those shoulders and potentially on the whole leg, because we're lifting paws up, and that makes sense. You know, and Paul, where do you live in New York?
Yeah, we live up here in Argyle.
Okay, yeah, that's also another thing, too, is the salt is terrible, as you know. It's like they dump it on thick around here, so so that's a thing, too. So anyway, so moving back into
the thing is, he's lifted his paws before, and I've cupped them in my hands because of the salt, and I waited till the snow melted, and then brushed them off, and he put it down, and we walked away, and everything was fine. Mm, I was incredibly surprised when he turned around and bit me when I did it.
Yeah. But again, it's his way of, it's very,
saying, don't touch me.
It's tough from a training perspective, because here's the way I look at it, is it's two options. Is you could just have a very clear, confident dog. That's exactly what they do to other dogs. Like, if my Mastiff is being too rough with my Shepherd, she'll turn around and nail him. Like, she's not attacking him. She's not trying to hurt. She's not trying to fight him. She's just letting him know through her teeth. Bang, stop, right? So that's a very clear thing. But the other side is if you do have a dog that has potential neurological problems where they bite at random, that could, but you're not really, you're kind of flirting with that, but it's not really there, because you actually do have a very easy targeted, isolated, it's not random. It's actually only when we touch him physically. So anyway,
so that's what I say. I think there's something physically. I mean, that's why I went after the digestion at first, because I really believe there's something physical here. And this dog is, he's reactionary. So he does it before he even thinks. I mean, I know this dog, he will go for it, and then he'll go, whoops, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. So you got to be careful about that. But anyway, so Let's get back into some of the training protocols that you can do outside of the physical things that you can do with your veterinarian. So we talked about desensitizing and isolating with the muzzle on to be safe. The other thing that you can start doing is And you got to be, and it already sounds like you're not super comfortable with correcting him for biting you, but it is an option to start working with just a little bit, just because because what you said in the beginning of the conversation that we're having is you said he could be just being a jerk, or maybe that's what your vet said or whatever.
That's what my vet said. She said, I think he's just a jerk. That's his personality, and that this dog shouldn't be on the furniture, shouldn't be up with you, shouldn't feel like he's equal with you. I think he thinks he's above us. I don't think he thinks he's equal with us.
Right. Yeah, right.
This dog, I think, he has his own mind. And okay. And from the get-go, I was not going to make him do anything he didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other thing, as you're moving forward with this, is it could also be... it could be a situation where you could correct him for the biting. Like this is something I would be doing with the muzzle on. Right. If you felt like this would have to be going through some testing, but if you felt like that he is being a brat and he's like, don't touch me, or maybe, hey, I'm going to correct you for touching me because I don't want you to touch me. It's not really fair to correct a dog if they're in pain. It's subjective, but yes, I definitely think that, when you are, you know, correcting a dog for being a jerk, that's fair. They're like, don't touch me. And it's like, oh, hey. Yeah, definitely. That's fair and warranted. The other thing is if you're correcting a dog for being upset or being in pain because they are actually in pain, it's not really that fair. To some degree.
Right. So, but I don't want him to just think that he can turn around and bite whenever he wants. I want him to get the message that you can be in pain, but you can't bite me when you're in pain.
Yeah. Right. And I agree with that. So you could start trialing, maybe correcting the dog for this, so you can start again, like putting the muzzle on and start working through some of the things, and just using a slip leash just to correct the dog. And what you want to look for and what you want to do with this is to see how he responds to it, because a dog who is typically doing this out of I'm going to get away with this, it's my world, not yours, don't touch me, I'm, like you said, like above you or whatever, this is your ability to correct the dog and see how he handles that, how he manages emotions during that situation. Because because this happens often when we see dogs who are just being pushy and they're just like being very mouthy and they're being very, yeah, pushy is a good word for it.
A butthead.
Yeah.
Being a butthead.
Sure. Yep. So yes, this is where, yeah, if you feel like that's the case where he's just being a jerk and you correct him, if he kind of looks at you like, oh, my bad, or, oh, you're actually going to hold me accountable for these actions that you don't like, that is definitely a good, that's good information for you. And that can happen.
How do you correct a dog that bites you? I mean, I make them place, and like the other trainer said to me, "Well, that's not a point."
So you just use
anything.
You just use what I'm referring to, because he only bites you when you're touching him. Is you would muzzle him, put a slip leash on him, and you just start really calmly stroking him. And the moment that he tries to bite you, you would correct him. Now, in my opinion, I wouldn't be correcting the lip lifting and
no,
even the
I'm not.
Yeah.
No. because we want that. That's our only warning.
Right.
When he lifts his lip, we know to move away.
Right. So I would be doing, that's what I would be doing, is I would be doing the corrections with the slip leash when we are trying to bite us. And you can see pretty quickly if the dog is like, oh, crap, you're actually going to hold me accountable for doing bad stuff, you know, then that's good. That's like, oh, okay, cool. That works. And then you can move forward from there, but it's tough because it's kind of a one lane street right now. We don't really know how he's going to do with that. But the reality is he's either in pain or he's being a brat and he's never gotten punished for putting his mouth on you guys for whatever. I don't think that's the case, because it seems like he has a good relationship with you guys. You've never had any issues.
He has a great relationship with us. Even my husband, who we bit three times, he absolutely adores him now.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband never hit him. This dog absolutely adores him. And, you know, we have never hit him. my sense is this is such a fearful dog that the minute he feels fear, or, you know, like if he's in pain, you're going to touch an area that's going to cause him, he's going to bite.
Yeah. 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 And I think like that's something that it could be a fear thing. It doesn't sound like it is to me personally, because you're petting him. It doesn't, like, because what you told me earlier is sometimes he absolutely, you know, loves to be pet and loves the attention.
Right. Like, he's on his back, you're rubbing his belly, you know, he loves it. But when we tried to re-put the bandage on his paw, even with the muzzle on, he clearly was having none of it. And that was a thing. I mean, like, he got right down on my lap, put his paws on me, but then put his head over the paw that we were trying to put the bandage on, not allowing me to. And I know he had a muzzle on, but he kept turning around and snapping, and we didn't want to traumatize him. I mean, it was becoming difficult because we were all heightened, you know, how your emotions get during that. And we were trying to bandage it, and we just said, leave it. And we walked away.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think it's, yeah. So I don't think it's a, I definitely don't think it's a fear thing. He's rolling over and he's like, yay, thank you for petting me. I love you. This is so great. Like, it's not a fear thing at that point. If you were to ask me, like, what I definitely think it would definitely be that your dog has some sort of arthritis, underlying arthritis, and you should really get some X-rays done on those shoulders and even on those hips to see if that's the case. And then, like I said, then you can start treating it. But the training aspect would be this. It would be, again, as a training scenario and as a roadmap, it would be putting the muzzle on the dog because we're doing things that we know that the dog is potentially going to bite us, and we obviously don't want that. We put the muzzle on the dog, we'd start petting the dog, stroking the dog, touching the dog, and then if the dog went to bite us, we would correct the dog. I would go this route only after you've done
do the physical.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Do the physical.
Like I said, this is the most bizarre thing, because for 6 to 8 months we had this wonderful dog. We thought the aggression was gone. My plan was to, like I said, take him to a facility, get him in daycare, to let him, because he doesn't play with other big dogs either. We have the Beagles. He had to learn how to tone it down a little bit for the Beagles because they're small. And he's learned that, but he doesn't have a dog his size. So I want him to play with other dogs. So I was going to bring him to daycare, but when he bites, then they're not going to let him play with the other dogs, or they're going to muzzle him, or they're going to whatever. And I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I want to. Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So, when he's going after the other dog, I think you said he had pugs. Is that correct?
Beagles.
Okay.
Beagles. Yeah. They're sisters.
Okay. So, give me the context of that. They're out. So the piece that they're in a pen. But let me know. Give me context.
They're in the pen, and they're fine together in the pen. You know, he gets a little rough and when, he plays.
What's a pen?
Runs. Oh, we have an acre filled in, and we have an acre fenced in, and we have a dog house. We have two dog houses, a big one that's insulated for him, a little one that's insulated for the Beagles, and then we have another little roofed shelter up by the front. And it's a fenced in acre of our yard that we bring them out in.
So the pen is your fenced in backyard.
Yes.
Great.
An acre of our fenced in backyard. So we bring the Beagles out and they hunt rabbits, and the rabbits get in there at night and they hunt there. He likes to hunt with the Beagles. He loves it. He's a hunter. I bring him out. We hunt mice. He loves to hunt. So
awesome.
I bring him out in the yard and we hunt together. I mean, that's what he does. He catches all the mice and the moles and all of that stuff. But because his paw is bad now, he can't get that. So that is another piece where he's been kind of curtailed, because we're waiting for this paw to heal. So they go out in the pen together and they play and they hunt and they sniff and everything's fine. We take them for walks together. They all sniff the same stuff. They're okay. There's no territoriality between them. But then they come in the house and he can be laying on the couch and the Beagle will walk by and he'll just jump down and just snap at the Beagle.
Okay. So let's walk through this. Give me context. Give me specific context here.
Well, we're all usually in the parlor. My husband's on one end of the couch. I'm on the other. The dog's in the middle. And then okay. The beagles are on the floor or on the side with my husband.
They're on the couch. All the dogs
sometimes,
are.
Sometimes. Sometimes they'll be coming in from the kitchen. It's happened different instances where sometimes they've just walked by the couch coming from somewhere else. And he all of a sudden jumps down and goes after them.
Okay. So... A couple things that has worked for my clients in the past is sometimes dogs, because he has a history, I would lean more into this more than anything, because he has a history of, resource guarding, I would say that it's likely more towards like this protective get out of here, thing, right? That's what I would say is,
well,
you're on the couch, you're hanging out, and the dog's like, I want you and your husband to himself. And he's grabbing the other dogs and correcting the other dogs and telling the other dogs, like, I don't want you around. And I think it's important for you to know that, again, I said this earlier, but to clarify, when a dog is doing this, like putting their teeth in other dogs, like them not hurting the other dog or puncturing or ripping or shredding is a decision that they make.
Okay.
Excuse me, which is important. It sounds like more of a correction.
Oh.
So if a dog was to try to hurt another dog or let's say attack, let's just use that word, attack another dog, that's where you would see like the latching on, the grabbing, the screaming and the punctures. And that's not what this is. It sounds more like the dog is correcting the other dogs or bullying the other dogs. And there's a couple of things that you can do. You probably don't have a leave it command with him. And that's something that you should start to work on. The other thing is,
leave it.
Yeah. Leave it is important. So, what I would do is put a slip leash on him in the house, and I would be going through these scenarios. Or even if you're like, okay, it's time to watch TV, and this is the scenario that this happens, we put a leash on him and just hanging out. It's people, dog owners, for some reason, like it's like very weird for them or new to them to think about putting a leash on a dog in the house. But it's your.
Yeah, when I first got him, we did the 2 weeks. He was leashed.
Cool.
Me for the 2 weeks that he was here. We leashed him to me.
Cool. Yeah. So I would just say like putting the leash on the dog and then correcting him if he does that. Just say leave it. And that would be how you would do that. Just let him know that's inappropriate and there is consequences for that. And then the other thing, and this is what I would be more inclined to do personally would be trying to, again, eliminate the trigger of it happening, which would be putting the shepherd, I didn't catch his name, but putting him off the couch and putting him into a place. Yeah. So let's say you have the beagles in the house and they're on the couch.
Yep.
You would send the shepherd to a place and a downstay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that, he's got his room. Here's the funny thing. He has taken himself to his place before when he has not wanted to be around. He gets up and removes himself from the situation. He's placed himself before when we've been out there and the beagles have been out there. He's gotten up and he's taken himself and placed himself in the room.
Yep. That's what I would do is if you get into a scenario that you feel like, okay, this is where it happens. This is, so again, like you're using obedience to essentially manage the situation so nothing happens. So it would be, oh, we're all on the couch. Dog comes in, go to your place, downstay, because I don't want to deal with it. And I don't want you to be a jerk. It ends it right there.
Okay. Okay. I mean,
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. It really does make sense. And I'm just so, stressed over this dog after 3 years that
it's stressful, go ahead.
I was just going to say, looking back at his records, I don't know if I said this, but looking back at his records, I was just trying to get his microchip switched over to me. Because I hadn't ever done that and we're going away. And I just wanted to make sure that was in place. And I went and looked back at his records and I looked at the thing from the shelter and up on the top in little print, there was a little box that said he had a bite card on his cage that, you know, if you go near this dog, do not put your fingers on this cage because he will bite. And I never saw that before. But I mean, we knew we had aggression issues shortly after we got him with the resource aggression. But of course, the rescue never shared any of that with me, that he had been an aggressive dog, which I really wish they would have. I might not have taken the dog and ended up in this situation that I'm in.
Yeah, so it happens, and it sounds like you've done a really good job with what you have. And my my suggestion is to, like, I know that it's stressful, but I think the majority of stress, especially with dogs, come from a lack of a game plan. As you kind of are searching for answers, and and I think you should, now you have we've gone over a bunch of things that you can start doing to start to get answers. And that's for me, that's really helpful. Whenever you feel overwhelmed, like, oh, I got to figure out whatever the problem is, regardless of what it is in your life. If you just say, this is my game plan to fix the problem or to start working on the problem, it's so much better on everything. And that's what I would suggest, because now you have some ammunition moving forward.
Okay, that's perfect. At least that's something. Do you feel it part of the issue? And I need to hear this, because this is what the other trainer said, and this is what my vet said, and I understand it, but I need to do better if that's the case. They said that I'm a good dog owner, but not a good dog leader, and I need to be a stronger dog leader. You think that will help correct this issue, or whether it's, I don't know. I mean, he can sit, he can place, he can stay, he can do all the commands.
Yeah. Well, I think what they're implying, and I see this a lot in the conversation, in these conversations, is you can, a lot of times, dogs and dog owners who have the good obedience, right? So the dog will do things if they ask, especially if there's motivation involved, food and other things. What ends up happening is it becomes a one-sided thing and a one-dimensional thing where, okay, cool, the dog will do things for you, for them, right? So they're sitting down and staying, and they know the obedience, and they're getting paid to do so. Great. But then when you ask the dog, or you tell the dog to do something that you don't want them to do, what does that look like? And let's say, for an example, you told him to sit and stay and you let the other dogs outside. These are things that if your dog would break and leave you and go and join the other dogs, even though you did say sit and stay, these are, so the leader conversation is typically a healthy balance of, cool, your dog loves you and you love your dog and you guys have some good obedience in typically unrealistic scenarios, which means, okay, cool, you got some food in your pocket, you're sitting and staying in a training environment. Well, what happens when you go outside and there's three other dogs barking behind a fence? How good does your dog listen to you? What's your respect like with your dog? If you tell your dog to sit and stay, will they stay regardless of the circumstances? That's typically what good leadership involves in, is like, no matter, because a lot of times it's just the dog's working for food and understands what you want them to do. But in scenarios where it actually, and in my opinion, it actually matters, right? People, I mean, so many times I do these consults for years and years and years and years and years. They'll say, hey, you know, my dog only listens when it's beneficial for them, essentially. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a one-dimensional relationship, which means you don't, leadership is part of it. But really what it is balance, which essentially means your kids will listen to you and respect you only in your house and only if you pay them or only if you give them allowance. But the moment that you're outside, or the moment that the money's gone, or the moment you say, I'm not giving you money to clean your room, all that goes away. That's not good leadership skills, right? So the dog doesn't look to you, and or the dog doesn't need the dog doesn't engage with you when things happen. So for an example, again, sit, stay, you throw a ball, the dog goes. That's things like that.
Well, I would definitely put us in that category. So how do I change that at this point after 3 years? What are some things I can do to become a better leader for this dog? Because he's driving me crazy.
Yep. The first thing I would do is I would start, you could start looking at my free YouTube videos. Those are super helpful because, for time's sake, it's like, The reality is, I commonly work with dog owners with behavioral issues because they've never held their dog accountable and they've never corrected their dog for the things that they don't want them to do. I just worked with, just this week, a dog owner came in with a French bulldog. The dog was barking habitually, demand barking, reactive to other dogs. She couldn't go anywhere with the dog. She can't walk with the dog. She is living a complete literal hell. She loves her dog.
I've been there. I know.
she loves her dog. Her dog loves her, but they can't go anywhere. They're getting complaints from the neighbors in the apartment that they're living in. They're fearing getting kicked out. And she did the same exact thing. I have given my dog zero boundaries for 3 years, and now my dog is a quite literal nightmare. Our relationship is awful. Our respect is awful. Everything sucks. And the best
way... When I first got him, he was like that. He is not like that anymore, but he was like that. The can't take him anywhere, the barking, the not being able to walk on a leash. We had all of that. I have tried to correct all of that. Not very successfully in some instances, but I have him on a control leash, which wraps and, you know, pulls on him if he pulls me. It's the only way.
Yeah. And but the other thing is too, is just like, you know, it's going to go into it, but when, for an example, like that particular thing is, so like, let's say you put I'm not familiar with it, but you put like a wrap leash on him. So you have to, is the dog, it's the same thing on the other end. Is the dog listening to you, or are they just doing it for food? It's the same thing. Is the dog listening to you, or are they just listening to the equipment?
He's listening to the equipment, and I needed to make it that way for my safety. He pulled me down and broke my finger when I first got him. And I watch him. I mean, we've done the heel. He'll heel when I want him to, but we were coming around the corner and he saw a chipmunk and took me flying. I wasn't prepared. I mean, I have to be hyper vigilant every single time I walk.
Right.
It was the leash.
Typically dog owners in these scenarios, like, you don't have a heel command. Right. So you go out to walk with your dog and you're using the equipment to just keep the dog from pulling you, but you're not actually teaching the dog what heel is.
Well, he knows how to heel, but I don't heel him all the time, because when I take him out, I let him sniff and get ahead of me and do all that. I don't want this dog to have to be next to me each time. Mm-hmm. We also walk him with the Beagles, who have a freer leash than he does. They have more room than he does.
Right.
I keep him on a shorter leash.
So when you're out with him and you're walking and the other dogs are out and you're not in your property and you tell him to heel, will he slide in the heel and walk nicely on a loose leash until you tell him?
He won't. I will have to make him heel.
Right. Well, that's what I'm
bring him next to me. That's what I'm down.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is he doesn't.
Yes.
So what you're saying is
he doesn't do it naturally.
Yes. Sorry. So what you're saying is when you tell the dog to do something, he's not going to do it. You have to force him to do it. So when we talk about being a good leader, I mean, define leader, right? Like it's the same thing with employees. Okay. Hey, I just hired you. Congratulations. I'm so excited for you to be part of our team. I need you to go and clean this up. No. So you have to literally take their hands, put it on the mop and start. No, that's not a good leader. Right. So that's what you're dealing with, is you need better foundation and you need better balance. That's the answer is you're currently not as good of a leader as you could be, because your dog doesn't know what you want them to do. So if they don't know heel without being the equipment, that's what I was saying earlier, your dog doesn't know heel without the equipment. You have to force them to do stuff, it's two things. It's either they don't know heel actually, right? Or, which is very common. You'll find that in my videos. People come in, 99% of the people who come in with behavioral problems, it doesn't matter if they've killed other dogs, they've put people into a hospital, or they're just annoyingly barking with no aggression behind it. Right. 99% of those clients out of hundreds are clients who do not have a good foundation with their dog, which means, hey, Tom, I want to stop my dog from barking on the leash. And I ask them, I want you to heel your dog for 5 steps in with this cone to this cone, and they can't do it. So their foundation and their relationship with the dog at its core doesn't exist. So they're trying to stop something, but they don't even know how to handle their dog. So my recommendation, obviously, because it's pretty much like a complete reset for you and your dog, is to check out a lot of the free videos I have online, because they're dog owners just like you coming in. and I walk them through the entire process.
Okay. Okay.
So, okay. Well, yeah, you got a lot of work to do. It sounds like, but the first thing I would do is get some x-rays to see if there's any severe arthritis. Cause honestly, it sounds like that is what it is.
It sounds like that to me too. And the other stuff is workable if I can get the aggression under a little bit of control a little bit. So
yeah,
I think that's our main concern, is this unpredictability with aggression. Because there does seem to be a rhyme or reason, but you know, it's a dog and people naturally go to pet a dog, especially when their tail's wagging.
So, yeah. And if they pet him in the wrong spot and he turns around, it's kind of like a lose-lose because the person gets bit and then your dog's like, oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So that's the first thing I would do. And yeah, you definitely got some investigating to do, but I would just write down your roadmap here and start to figure things out.
Okay. And thank you so much for all your help.
Oh, you're welcome so much.
I hope I didn't overwhelm you.
You did not at all.
Okay. All right. Yes.
I wish you the best of luck, Joanne. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
And have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
If you love hurricanes, daiquiris, and, well, any rum cocktail, listen up. Captain Morgan's about to shake things up like never before. We're talking Bourbon Street, New Orleans, home to legendary drinks and unforgettable moments. But what if we told you the most iconic cocktails here have one thing in common? Hint? It's not bourbon. That's right, it's rum. And Captain Morgan is bringing unforgettable fun to Bourbon Street in a way you won't want to miss. Get ready for something big as we gear up for Super Bowl 59. Make sure to keep your eyes on NOLA's most iconic street. Who knows? Bourbon Street might just need a new name. Stay tuned for clues and get ready for the most legendary adventure yet. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Original Spice Rum, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Company, New York, New York.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.